You're listening to the London Buddha Centre, talks and seminars from our home in Bethnal Green, exploring Buddhism in a way that is relevant to contemporary life.
Okay, good. I actually forgot the title of the talk was supposed to be Minding the Gap, and I wasn't actually, I'd actually forgotten to talk about the famous gap, but I'll try and remember to talk about the gap because it is quite important. I thought I'd called it Watching the Gap, actually, because in Mahjabandhu and I have recently been in America, and on the subway stations there, instead of saying Mind the Gap, it says Watch the Gap, which I thought was a much clearer message. anyway, so we've come from, yeah, this is what we're, this is what I'm going to talk about, some of this anyway. It's a fairly complicated symbol. But anyway, we've been exploring this symbol for a few nights, mainly under the heading of the reactive mind and the creative mind, okay? Actually, mainly, entirely, this image is to do with the reactive mind. We haven't quite got on to the creative mind. I'm hoping we'll get there tomorrow with Subhadra Mathew, but we might not. But definitely Friday, I'll talk about the creative mind. I was hoping we might get actually off the wheel tonight, but I'm actually not sure we will. So anyway, here we are. We've got this wheel that's being held in the grip of the Lord of Yama, the Lord of Death. Subhadra Mathew started us off talking about those. Actually, just to let you know, Amala Yodin there, my really beautiful assistant, of course, he's got a laser pointer. So when I talk about, there you go. Okay, so for example, when I talk about the central circle of the wheel, yeah, so if you get confused as to what I'm talking about, I know it's a bit difficult at the back to see, just look for the red dot, because I'm actually going to be talking about the outer wheel, outer rim of the wheel, okay, so so there you go, so that should help. Anyway, we started off talking about the central wheel, greed, hatred, and delusion, okay? The hub of the reactive mind, the, in a way, kind of the powerhouse that keeps the reactive mind going. Actually, also, just to mention, this wheel, although it's a nice static image, kind of, I mean, in reality, so to speak, there's not really a wheel, but, like, in reality, it's spinning unbelievably fast. So what we're actually looking at is a stationary image, as it were, of a completely fluid experience of reactivity that goes on every single moment of consciousness. So every single moment of consciousness, all of this wheel is present, okay, or aspects of it, or at least some of it in potential. Okay, so Yama, the Lord of Death, is actually compassionately holding the wheel for us. He's Avalokiteshvara, the Bodhisattva of compassion in disguise, so we can see what we're like. Okay, so it's like a mirror. It's a mirror that we're looking at. But yeah, it's spinning incredibly fast. So it's an image of how consciousness arises moment to moment. Okay, so that's what we'll be exploring tonight. So yeah, at the centre is greed, hatred and delusion, which is where Subhadra Mathew started off mainly. Just surrounding that, you've got two sort of circles, one dark, one light, with beings rising and falling around. They rise and fall through the outcomes of their actions. Okay, so life goes up and down, they go round and round. Gosh. And then last night, Mahamani talked about each of these six realms. So the six spokes talked about the six realms and how, basically explained how mind creates world and how our mind creates basically the world we live in and the objects we live with within those worlds. Okay, I'm now going to start trying to speak about this outer rim. I thought I was going to start off just by talking about the outer rim, but anyway, I thought I'd just start off with an example of my own life of the reactive mind, so you can get to know me a little bit, and then I'll speak about the outer rim, and then I might try and finish off with another example. Anyway, I've just been up a mountain for 3 weeks on solitary retreat. I don't know, some of you will have done solitary retreats. They're pretty good things to do. You definitely have a strong experience of what your mind is like. You know, you have quite a strong experience. I had a quite strong experience of what my reactive mind was like and what my creative mind was like, as it were. Anyway, this one interesting experience, well, I don't know, it was interesting to me, it might be not interesting to you, but you get your food delivered weekly. It's not like a great selection of food, it's like the basic stuff. You don't get any chocolate, for example. You just get tofu, vegetables and some muesli and stuff like that. Anyway, even so, there's not a lot else going on, so it's quite an exciting. It can be quite an exciting little arrival when the food comes. They put it in a bin down the track. You go and get it. Anyway, I went and got my food. Actually, I was quite pleased. I wasn't that excited about it this time. And I was unpacking my food, putting the veg away, put the bread down, tofu, and then I picked up the bread to. Put it in the cupboard, and already like a load of ants had eaten through the little plastic packaging and got into the bread. So loads of ants in the bread, little tiny little red ants, you could hardly see them, they looked like crumbs. And I immediately got frustrated because this was my big bundle of pleasure that I'd just been delivered, wasn't it? It's like this is my bread. Weird, because like 10 minutes ago I didn't even know it existed. Suddenly it's like in my hands and it's mine, and it tells me, I relate to it in terms of stored up pleasure. Like over the next week I'm going to have X number of slices of bread a day, and I like that because I can put jam on that and it's tasty. Gives me a lot of pleasure. So I'd focused in on that. And suddenly, without me knowing, these ants had got in, and I don't like ants. Well, I don't mind ants, as long as they keep... Anyway, these ants had got into my bread, and ants aren't mine, and I don't like them on my stuff. Okay? So I was suddenly in this situation where I was just expecting, like, a nice feeling of pleasure. I've got all my supplies in for a week. And my supplies had been intruded, and I immediately got frustrated. And I couldn't believe that ants had got into my bread. Like, I was on my own. I don't normally do this. I was on my own. I didn't have anything else to do. So I was like, oh, no. Like, oh, no. And it was so frustrating because in that small area of reality, there was something that I wanted... And there was something that I didn't want in the same tiny little space of a bread packet. And I had to somehow deal with that. Anyway, what I did was I went outside and sort of got all the slices out of the bag, balancing them on my hand, tapped each slice on the wall to get the ants off, and then put the bread back together and then put it back in the bag. Anyway, that was an absolute nightmare because there were mosquitoes all over the place. So I was like, by the time I got in back into the hut, I was absolutely like so frustrated, but satisfied as well, because I'd reasserted my will over the surrounding environment and got back my pleasurable supplies in the order that I liked them in, if you see what I mean. Okay, that's the reactive mind. It was extremely painful. Like, that's all I can really say about it. Moj Bandha was talking about suffering in the break. That was suffering. And that was so small, like the tiny, tiny, it's like a tiny selection of mental states completely dominated my mind. And when I talk about mental states, I don't just mean irritable thoughts. What I mean is, when I talk about the mind, my whole being. Like, I was completely involved in the situation. It wasn't just a thought. It wasn't a psychological problem. It felt like an existential problem. Like, I was completely involved in this situation. Weirdly enough, once it was all sorted out, I thought, actually, I don't even want any bread. And I thought, I eat too much bread anyway, and I don't like bread because it's got loads of gluten in it, it makes me feel bloated, and I didn't have any bread for the rest of the retreat. So it was completely useless, and it was extremely painful, and it took a lot of energy. And while I was in it, I was 100% involved. 100% involved in it. And it was only after that I was able to regain some awareness and think, whoa, like, what was that? Like, what was I doing? It was completely made up, and it was really, really painful. Okay? That's the reactive mind. And most people, including me, do that a lot of the time. We're always deciding out of this whole range of kind of stuff that goes on that we call life, we're deciding these are the bits I want and those are the bits I don't want. And we put a lot of energy into trying to keep that balance at bay, aren't we? That's what we do. Some people can spend their whole lives doing that, like decades and decades of trying to get the bread without the ants. And you can't do it. And it's really frustrating and it's endlessly painful. Okay? So that is what that image there represents. It represents that sort of reactive mind, a kind of ricocheting between pain and pleasure. When there's pain, you just want pleasure. When there's pleasure, well, you want to keep pleasure. Yeah, you keep ricocheting. You try and keep pain away. It comes back. The ants come back. Yeah, that's a reactive mind. So what this outer rim of the wheel does is basically explain how the reactive mind works. Okay, it's really helpful to know how the reactive mind works, or to at least have some sense that there is actually a mechanism, as it were, that you can do something about if you know about it. If you know about it, you can start to look for this elusive gap, which most of us don't know much about, this very, very small gap, and get off. Okay, that is possible. It is possible. That's the point of the teaching, so that we can get off and stop being reactive. Okay, so basically what this outer rim of the circle does is illuminate us, tells us, as far as I'm concerned, the facts. Okay, the facts of what we are and what we do. Okay, that's what the outer rim tells us. It tells us what we are and what we do, both of which are very important to understand, particularly what we do. So I'll start off with what we are. Try and be fairly brief with this. But so the first, it's not exactly the first two links, but the links, the segments that I'm going to start with are birth and death. Okay, so Emily Yodin's going to illuminate birth. So birth is there, so an image of a woman giving birth, and death is an image of a corpse being carried on the back of a person, presumably being taken to the graveyard, cemetery, something like that. Okay, those are facts, aren't they? Okay. We've all been born, obviously, although none of us know anything about it. It's extremely weird, isn't it, to think that at one point we were all inside another human being. Incredible. Like, how did that happen? And how did I get here? So we can assume that we have been born, although probably none of us have much experience of that or memory of that experience. Maybe we do, I don't know. I don't, anyway. We've been born and we know that we will die. I mean, it's pretty hard to think about, isn't it? It really is very hard to remember that we're going to die. But we will. It's a fact. You can't change that. Birth and death are facts. And there's nothing we can do about that now. We're already in it. We're already in the situation. So birth and death are a result of something that's already happened. Okay? Okay, so those are those two segments of this this outer rim. So the some of the other segments basically flesh out a bit what birth and death is. Okay, you know, because not very descriptive, birth and death. So what exactly goes on, in a sense, between birth and death? So the first bit, no, sorry, Emily Odin. I know it's tempting to start on that one. So the first, in a way, spark of life, you could say, is what's sometimes called sentience or consciousness. And this is illustrated by that monkey in a tree. I think it's grabbing at fruits, okay, which is quite interesting, isn't it? You get this primary, or you could say primal consciousness that kind of grabs at something, and that's the beginning of life, okay, in a way, the beginning of life. Following that, it's like consciousness at its lowest evolutionary, on the lowest evolutionary scale, primal consciousness. It sparks into life. The next one around is what's called, rather technically, the psychophysical organism. If you ever thought of yourself as a psychophysical organism, you should try it. So this is really what describes our basic personality. So what makes up our personality? We've all got a sort of a group of conditions, haven't we, that kind of makes us sort of who we are. And this is a picture of 1, 2, 3, 4, I think it's 4 or 5 people in a boat, one of whom is steering. So the boat is the body. Okay, we've got a body. And then in the boat, you've got feeling, perception, volitional activities, you know, things you do, and consciousness. Consciousness is the figure steering the boat. Okay, it's a good image, isn't it? So that's what we've got between these two points, life and death, a psychophysical organism, or the basic makings of our personality. Because we've got that bundle of things, we've also got the 6 senses. In Buddhism, the mind is also a sensing faculty. So that is a house with 5 windows and a door. Okay, those are the 6 senses. The door is the mind. The windows are the other 5 senses. Okay, brilliant imagery, I think. We've got, you know, these are things we can't do anything about, by the way. Of course, we've got the 6 senses. That's a given. Because we've got the 6 senses, we come into contact with things that can be sensed, don't we? We can see things. There are things that can be seen. And because we've got a sensing faculty that can see things, we see them. If we didn't have that faculty, we couldn't see, obviously. So that is an image of... what is it? A man and a woman embracing. Okay? So a man and a woman embracing. So you have, it's a good image, I think. You've got senses and sense objects, say. Because you've got them, you have contact. Yeah? Just like a man and a woman embracing each other, you get this contact. You also get kind of this perception of, like, me and the world, like you get this slight divide happen. So you've got two objects, a man and a woman. They're kind of one thing in a sense because they're completely in contact, but they're kind of separate entities. It's a bit like what happens in our mind. We think there's a separate entity in here, separate world out there that we're in contact. Anyway, contact happens. On the basis of contact, you have, some of you will know this, you have what's called feeling tone. Feeling tone can be pleasurable, painful, or neutral, can't it? So if you embrace your lover, like in the previous thing, it's pleasurable, isn't it? Well, as long as you're getting on, it's pleasurable. if you're not getting on, it's not pleasurable. When you see your lover, if you see your enemy walking down the street, it's not a pleasurable sensation, is it? It's painful. It's immediately painful. If someone stamps on your toe or pushes you on the tube, it's painful. You don't want that. It's a painful experience. You can't do anything about that. It's just fact. Okay? So the last one, what was it called? Feeling tone is illustrated by a man with an arrow in his eye. Okay, so that's a very visceral description of what feeling tone is like. If someone, well, I don't need to describe it, it's completely obvious. Okay, so that, in a way, that, in one way, ends that sequence. So that is the end of the, in a way, the result of what we've got. Okay, that's the end, in a sense, of what we are. We've got that. So there's nothing we can do about any of that. Okay? What actually happens is there's also a big part of what we call life and mind is what we do. So we can do things about what we do. So what happens, they lead seamlessly on from one another. So after contact, okay, you can see after contact there's a little dot on the red. That's the gap. Okay, see it? So that's the bit. We'll come back to that, hopefully, but we're going to bypass that for the moment.
It's after vagina, or it's after...
That's it, there it is. Okay. What happens next, what usually happens next, without awareness, this is, remember, an image of the reactive mind. Reactivity thrives in unawareness. Okay, if you haven't got any awareness, you'll just be reactive. There's nothing you can do about it. The only way to stop being reactive is to develop awareness. So without awareness, we miss that little gap and we go on. And on the basis of feeling tone, okay, pleasant or unpleasant sensations arises craving. Okay, craving is illustrated by a seated man being offered a drink by a woman. I think this is a nice image, partly illustrates the word for craving, which is something like thirst. Yeah, so that's what it's a bit like. It's a bit like thirst. Craving is a bit like thirst, isn't it? It's that kind of feeling that if you could only possess something, you'll be satisfied. If you could only possess it, you'll be satisfied. If you could only have that drink, you won't be thirsty anymore. Okay, but it's also interesting, I think, that there's someone being offered something. And it's like we are being offered things all the time, aren't we? It's like the world, or what we call the world, is always offering us things that we might want. Have you noticed that? And it's like, it's really, really persistent. And I might have to come back to this, but anyway, it never ends, doesn't it? You know, you get the thing that you want, and then there's another thing, isn't there? Like, it really is like that. You think, like, you know, Like, at the moment, I'm thinking, like, I've got to get my iPhone battery replaced. Like, I wasn't even thinking about that 2 weeks ago, but suddenly it's like, oh, yeah, that would be really good. That would be great if I could get that. And then I wouldn't have to charge it up all the time, because charging it up is an inconvenience, etc., etc. But, like, I think, like, hang on a minute, I've been doing this for decades. Like, there's always something else, isn't there? You get your Apple iPhone battery replaced. There's something else. There's a book, there's music, there's always something. Yeah, there's a fridge full of stuff. There's beds full of other people. There's all sorts of things. There's tables full of food. There's always things, aren't there? Anyway, so we're being offered something. Yeah, we're being offered something. This is craving. It's an overinvestment of the object with the power to satisfy you in ways that it cannot. Okay, that's what craving is. It's not to say that you can, of course, you can have a drink and enjoy it and not get caught up in craving. And you can enjoy, it's very important to enjoy life. It's just really important. So it's not that you suddenly got to, like, oh, no, I won't have that drink, thank you very much. I'm not indulging in craving. It's not that. You can still do things and enjoy life, but it's not all. It's craving that we're interested in. It's the overinvestment in the object. What happens on the basis of that is grasping, which is illustrated by a woman taking fruit from a tree. Okay, so this has definitely become more active, hasn't it? The object has appeared in our minds. It's appeared, it's as it were being offered to us, and we're now grasping it. We're moving towards it. We're going out to get it. Okay? And we want to appropriate things that we long for, don't we? We want them. We want to have them. It's not that we just can appreciate them. We actually want to have them. We want to have material objects. We want to have people. We want to have ideas. We want to have views and opinions. We reach out, as it were, to the fruit of the tree and try and grab all of those. Okay? On the basis of that arises becoming, which is an image of a pregnant woman. So, interesting image. Two things, as it were, have become one. The thing that you've grasped, the bread that has arrived into your mind and your life, has suddenly become mine. It's my bread. It's no longer a separate thing. To me, it's suddenly become mine. okay, and this is called becoming. And this is how this is how we make the world that we live in. We kind of, what we cling to, you know, the people we cling to, the objects we cling to, the ideas that we cling to, they determine the world that we inhabit, and we live in the experiences that we get from those. Okay, that leads on to where we started, which is birth. So in a way, it's not like I started off talking about it as a physical birth, but you can think of it in terms of a birth of consciousness, the next moment of consciousness that arises after craving, grasping and clinging. Or becoming. Yeah. That's what's being brought into being. That's what's being born. It's a new mind that's arisen on the basis of craving. Okay? And the condensed version of that is the last two segments that we'll talk about. So you have what's called ignorance, which is there's a blind man with a stick. Okay, blind man with a stick, like just walking around thinking he knows exactly what's going on, keeps bumping into things, hitting things. Yeah, just a blind man with a stick. And then the next one is what's called karma formations or volitional activity. So it's a potter making pots. Okay, so when as the potter is making pots, each pot is slightly different depending on the potter's state of mind as he or she makes the pot. Yeah? So it's like, out of ignorance, you act in the world and create pots that are then in the world. Your actions are in the world. They've been made, they've been created by you, and they're in the world. Okay? Okay, so that's the outer rim. I was going to try and fit all of this into this bread ant experience. I'm not quite sure I'm not 100% sure I can. Anyway, one of my... maybe I'll just talk a little bit about sensations. I think the main thing that I wanted to say about that experience with the bread and the ants is hopefully, first of all, hopefully it's obvious that that outer rim, particularly from feeling and contact and craving, is illustrated in that example of bread and ants. Pretty obvious, isn't it? Like, just this thing appears, you grab hold of it, make it yours, and then you get into, you know, you get into pain. The thing that I reflected on that I wanted to talk about was, like, my as it were, reaction to that was frustration. I got frustrated because, for the moment, the world wasn't going my way. And what I realised was that, what ignorance is that I deeply believe that that is the appropriate response. Do you see what I mean? So, like, I got frustrated because I'm kind of like that. That's my tendency. You might be different to me, like... If you were in that situation and that happened, you might get depressed, or you might get anxious, or you might get fearful. So you might think, you might just like get really anxious and just like, oh, I really don't like this. Or you might think like, oh, this is really, really unpleasant. And why does this always happen? You know, frustration was my own kind of form of reactivity that's kind of what I do. Do you see what I mean? But you all might act in you've all got your own ways. But the thing is, I think the interesting thing is that I kind of deeply believe that that is the right response to the situation. Do you see what I mean? I actually think, no, it is actually, that is right. To get frustrated at ants in my bread, that is right. Like, who wouldn't get frustrated? Do you see what I mean? I think that's the ignorance bit. It's like, it's a deep belief that all of that exists and I'm right and my response is right and it's valid. Do you see what I mean? Weird thing, like, I was thinking, God, yeah. I really think that is the right response, but it doesn't need to be. But it's the ignorance, the ignoring the facts, like, for example, the simple fact of impermanence and the simple fact that the bread in itself isn't mine anyway, and it really is no big deal, and I don't need to do that. Ignored all of that, and used that as a basis to get frustrated. So there's that, and then the other thing is that it's not like you just have you and a little bit of craving. it'd be nice if it was like that, if it was you and just a little bit of craving. But if you have craving, you have the whole package, you have the whole deal. When the Buddha talks about it, he talks about it in terms of birth, death. I can't remember quite what it was. Sorrow, lamentation, pain, grief, and despair. Okay? It's not very attractive, but anyway, you get the whole lot. Once you've passed craving, you can't then get off again. So you get the whole lot if you get into craving. Okay? Really sobering. Not very fun, is it? Wednesday night, and I'm talking about this. Anyway. God, so much to say. Anyway, it's a bit like we're trying to make everything okay rather than trying to be okay with everything. It's like we're always trying to make everything okay rather than just being okay with how things are. And that's what keeps us going round on the wheel. One of the things that happens is we equate pleasant sensations with happiness. Okay, so we get a pleasant sensation, or we want a pleasant sensation, because we equate it with happiness. And we think that if we have more pleasant sensations, we'll be more happy. Gosh, there's so much to say, but it doesn't work like that, does it? So we think we'll get pleasant sensations, so we act accordingly with craving, and then we get a whole bundle of other sensations, don't we? So one example would be like we get the thing that we want. I don't know what it is, anything, any desirable object, and we forget that other people like those objects too, and they get envious of us, and we don't like people being jealous of us or envious of us. It's quite unpleasant, but we get that as well as getting pleasant sensations. So the pleasant sensations, as it were, also bring unpleasant sensations. Sometimes what we think of as unpleasant is just our own thoughts. So another thing I noticed, there's lots of mosquitoes on this retreat. And when I went outside, again, it was like it took me a while to be able to enjoy the view, because mosquitoes would start pestering me and they would land on me and bite me. Of course, that's what mosquitoes do. What I noticed was that, like, you know what it's like when there's a mosquito around, you just try and flick it off. Sometimes you try and kill it. You just want it away. But what I notice is that, like, why do we do that? Because it's not actually painful. When a mosquito lands on you, it's not painful. When it bites you, I couldn't feel it, actually. I could only feel it later when the bite started itching. But like the impulse to get it away from me was extremely strong. But what I realised was that the bit that I didn't like was my own, like, hatred. Do you see what I mean? Or my own fear, and my own fear of pain rather than pain in itself. Anyway, gosh, I mean, I have to say I'm nowhere near the end of my talk, and there's only 3 minutes left of the evening, so we're probably not going to finish, but maybe I'll just try and finish on another example. I can't quite really do this justice, but another thing I noticed about craving was that it introduces time. Okay, so as soon as you crave something, as soon as you set up the object of your craving, it introduces time, because you immediately say, like, when? Okay, there's this thing, like whatever it is, an ending. I started fantasizing about the ending of a retreat. Like, when? When am I going to get it? If it's a person, it's like, when are we going to meet? If it's a product, it's like, when am I going to go and get it? I think you can't have craving without also having time. Okay? So I was then thinking, well, I wasn't thinking this, but I just really started to notice that. And I started to notice, it wasn't really that I noticed that when there was craving, it was painful. I just noticed that when there was time, it was painful. It was painful being in time. And I kept noticing that I created that. Like, I created time because of craving. And I kept kind of realizing that was painful. Like, being in time was painful. And And I kept noticing that I pulled myself, as it were, back out of time into time again. Do you see what I mean? But that, and that felt like a habit. It felt like I kept wanting to do that, that craving pulled me from out of time, which does exist. It is an experience. It's not nothing. Out of time is experience. It's just not experience that's got anything to do with time, and it's experience that's got nothing to do with craving. But the habit in my mind pulled me back out of that, into time, into craving, or maybe the other way around, and into pain. Okay? So I was thinking that actually, I think this is, I don't know, I mean, hundreds of years of Buddhist tradition, but I think a better title for this image would be the Wheel of Time, because it doesn't describe all life, it just describes life in time. And not all of life is in time. And that is where we're heading tomorrow.
You've been listening to the London Buddha Centre. Make sure to press the subscribe button, and then please take a moment to rate and review this podcast. It really helps other people to find us. Thank you.